It's lovely to be back here, and especially on this very special Sunday, and to have had be able to take part in a service like this. So I'm very grateful for that. I'll just say a little prayer and then share some thoughts. Lord, the wonder of your love and of your presence in our lives is that as we remember the Queen and her calling, we can think about our calling. And you are the Lord of sea and sky who understands each one of us, whatever our station, whatever our place in life. And you call each one of us to hold other people in our hearts and in our prayers. And Lord, we want to do that. Help us to do that, Lord. But thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today and to celebrate and to bless you and to bless one another in your name. Thank you, Lord. Amen. Just a little aside with that clip about the stag, actually, Nick, because it reminded me watching it again. The day that Amy, who is our older daughter, now 20, the day she was born, and I was driving back from Barnstaple Hospital, probably about 7 o'clock at night, and I saw a stag come over the hedge in front, way down the road. It wasn't dangerous or anything, but it was in the road, and it came over the hedge, landed on the road, and then just bounded off over the hedge on the other side. Now, in my memory, it's in slow motion, but that's just my memory of it, of course. But it was just this amazing moment, and you know, thinking about that clip, the way creation and nature can remind us of the presence of God, and for me, that was a blessing. That was like God's blessing on a perfect day for us. When our first daughter was born, really. But so much in creation can remind us that God is with us, as we thought about there for the Queen, really, and that moment of still, that quietness and stillness. I find quietness very difficult, but it is something I'm trying to learn about much more. A few years ago, someone here I'm sure will know what this was for. It was probably for a birthday, was it? A special birthday of the Queen? Anyone come across this book, The Servant Queen and the King She Serves? A few years ago, wasn't it? I wasn't sure if they might relaunch it for this. But it's basically a book, I'm sure it's still available, about the Queen and her faith. You still have some copies? Oh, okay, we've just got some copies. It was put together by a Christian organisation, wasn't it? Publisher or something? Bible Society. Right, so the Queen is patron of the Bible Society, and this was put together by them just as another way of celebrating her faith and pointing to the King, Jesus, that she serves. And so in a minute, I looked it up this morning just to get a little bit of a sort of summary of something about her faith. So I'll share that with you in a minute. But first of all, Nick has managed to borrow this radio, and it was one of the first things that came to my mind, really, when thinking about the Queen and her faith, was perhaps a story for so many of us, is who has influenced us in our lives. And this is that amazing moment when, back in May 1940, the King was encouraged to call a day of prayer, because the soldiers were gathering at Dunkirk, and it seemed impossible that they could be rescued because the enemy was closing in with tanks and planes. It was a desperate situation. So I want to play you a little bit of a recording of that. So it's very muffled because it's of its time, but hopefully you might catch a little bit of it. I'm just going to tune the radio in as we do that, and hopefully you'll catch. This is the Queen's father going before her and setting an example of calling people to pray and have faith. So let's just have a listen to that.
God the Most High. We are in your
It's not easy for him to do that because he had his own problems about speaking in public and all of that story as well, and his own confidence and his own history. But I guess it must have been something they talked about for quite a long time afterwards, as a nation, as a family, because extraordinary things happened as a result of that call to prayer over that period of rescue at Dunkirk in the Second World War in 1940. We know several things. One extraordinary thing was that Hitler stopped his tanks 10 miles away from Dunkirk for no reason. He had all these tanks ready to attack the beaches, and they just stopped for 3 days and did nothing. And during those 3 days, that was when the rescue happened. The weather over the beach became stormy and cloudy, and so the planes, the bombers, could only bomb a little bit on those beaches. And then what happened was the clouds of dust and smoke that were thrown up by the bombing that did happen, gathered above the place of rescue. So there was this cloud of smoke that hung over this place, which stopped the planes from seeing what was going on. And of course, then the most amazing story of all the boats that went to rescue the soldiers. But the sea was unexpectedly, unnaturally calm, so that they could sail. Many more stories, I'm sure, came out of that. But I think to call, you know, a group of people, whoever they are, to pray publicly like that is a powerful thing, isn't it? It's a powerful thing. Jesus talked about when people get together in his name, then he is there with them. And of course, he's with us all the time, but a certain kind of presence and a certain kind of power descended in that experience. And I'm sure the Queen perhaps, you know, never forgot that story. She would have known about it. And perhaps it affected her faith as well. This is what I found when I looked up the book. I'll read it very quickly to you. With a reign that bridges the 20th and 21st centuries, Queen Elizabeth has become the definition of stability, faithfulness, and dignity. Fearlessly, she led her country into the modern age with a balance of historical tradition and entrepreneurial initiative, public service, and private devotion. Nearing 7 decades on the throne, the Queen has faced many personal and public storms. An early and surprising ascension to the throne herself, the dissolution of the British Empire, political upheavals, international crises, national tragedies, family deaths, and the tabloid travails of her children and grandchildren. But throughout all her trials and triumphs, Her Majesty credits her personal faith in Jesus Christ as the steadying anchor to her life and reign. And I just want to show you a little bit from, I think this is last Christmas's Queen's speech, where she's talking about children and what they bring into our lives, and then particularly the birth of Jesus. Just a short bit of her. I thought it's a great example of her talking publicly about her faith to the whole nation.
They teach us all a lesson, just as the Christmas story does. That in the birth of a child, there is a new dawn with endless potential. It is this simplicity of the Christmas story that makes it so universally appealing. Simple happenings that form the starting point of the life of Jesus, a man whose teachings have been handed down from generation to generation and have been the bedrock of my faith. His birth marked a new beginning. As the carol says, the hopes and fears of all the years are met in thee tonight.
I love that little quote she gives at the end there, the hopes and fears of all the years, because that is very much a part of our following Jesus, isn't it? that through all the ups and downs, he is with us. Very aware, you know, at the moment I've got a couple of friends that are really, you know, going through it in difficult places, and yet are men of great faith, both of them. Very different men, but men of great faith. And God is with them in Jesus in those difficult times. And I'm sure we're all very aware of that. The hopes, the good times, and the fears, the difficult times, you know, of all the years. And I think as she's got older, the Queen has been a bit bolder in some of those speeches about what she believes and feels able to talk about that. When I was thinking about a Queen and proclaiming faith and drawing others to have faith, I thought of this little story from the Old Testament. The Queen who proclaimed the true King. What happened was the Queen of Sheba came to visit a King Solomon, it was. And she looked around at the way the kingdom was working at that point, and it was not bad at that point. To be honest, King Solomon started well, but didn't go very well. Excuse me. Very well over time. But at that point, the kingdom was working well. And this was what happened was, what the Queen of Sheba saw was what was always supposed to happen with Israel. She looked at the way Israel was working, and I've highlighted that line. She said, "Your God, the Lord your God, is great indeed. He delights in you and has placed you on the throne of Israel. Because the Lord loves Israel with an eternal love. He's made you his king so you can rule with justice and righteousness." And that was always the plan, that Israel would be a model state who looked to God really as their king, not an earthly king, who looked to God as their king. Other nations would come and go, "We want a piece of that. That's brilliant. That's a much better way than what we're doing. Let's be like Israel." Sadly, what Israel did was they looked out at other nations and went, "We want kings like they've got." That's how it began with King David. People went, you know, Samuel, who was the prophet at that time, said, "You want to have God as your king. You have an earthly king, they'll enslave some of you, they will take your possessions, they'll take your land." And this is exactly what happened. And the plan was, God is their king, other nations will come and see the way it works, and they will want to have the living God as their king. So here's a queen who, like our queen, is pointing to the true king, saying, "I can see that your God makes things work well and work better." So I was thinking about that little story, really, and the way the queen continues to point to the true king, the living God. Now, Nick mentioned about the Land Rover, the Queen working with Land Rovers. And in our house, we are a very big fan of a series called Horrible Histories. And what Horrible Histories do, or the team that do it do, they take things from ordinary life and use them to tell history in a fun kind of way. So here they are telling the story of Princess Elizabeth during the war.
In World War II, everybody did their bit. And when I say everybody, I mean everybody. Even Princess Elizabeth. You know, the one who went on to be Queen Elizabeth II. That's the spirit.
Big jobbing mechanic has begun this school. There's war on ladies. Learn to use it soon. All our fingers have to be first class.
And while it's royal blue, the young princess who's chasing this car is future Queen Liz too.
One's gloves are ruined.
Do you recognise the label at the end there? Not quick fit, but Queen Fit. But so Nick, she was obviously a mechanic, working on particularly on Land Rovers, she said. And was that in this country or for the various forces, for the army or
Yeah.
I love it as an example of getting your hands dirty. I mean, literally, isn't it? Getting your hands dirty. And that great example of practical service, not just through spoken word, which can, of course, when you're a leader, is very important, but actually getting involved. And I know that her parents, during the Second World War, they visited a lot of the bomb sites I think in London, was it? I don't know if it's other cities as well. But where, when the Blitz was happening and people were losing their homes and their families, they went around and they visited the people in those places to try and encourage them to hang on in there and to keep going, really. And service, of course, is a big part of what it is to follow Jesus. So I thought I'd show you this little clip from the BBC Passion, and it's a moment where the disciples are doing what they do best, arguing, and trying to push each one of them, pushing themselves forward as the best kind of leader, really. And so they, at this point, they are discussing how when they were in the temple and Jesus turned the tables over and it looked like it might get violent, they were ready to fight with their swords. And Jesus interrupts all that with a whole different perspective. Have a look at this.
In the temple this morning, we didn't hesitate. We drew our swords.
So what?
What are you talking about?
Ask these two.
Are we your most trusted leaders?
Why?
What makes you two so special?
John, you call me leader, but I'm a servant.
If you interpret my message first, you must be a servant to others.
I don't want my disciples to be known by their wealth or their status. In my eyes, the greatest among you is the one who is most humble.
I want you to be known by the love you show each other.
There we go. Startling words there from Jesus for those disciples who felt it was about something else entirely. Jesus talks about humility there. And I heard a great definition of humility recently. It was this. Humility is knowing your place in the world and being at peace with that. So it moves away from this idea of humility being, oh, I've always got to bow down, always got to sort of say everybody else is better than me, or I can do everything for everybody else, or be a doormat even. It's moving it to a different perspective. It's saying, knowing who you are, who God has made you to be in this world, being at peace with that so you're not striving to be someone you're not, and then able out of that to serve other people, knowing your place. I think it's a lifelong discovery, but I would encourage you to pray about it, because I think it's only God that can open our eyes to that, so that we're not constantly trying to achieve like the disciples in there were trying to achieve and get one over on other people or prove working hard enough so that God will love us. That's something, you know, we all wrestle with, isn't it? But, you know, for Jesus, one of the beautiful things in the Gospels is John 13, chapter 3, where it says Jesus knew who he was. It says he knew where he'd come from, he knew where he was going, and he knew what God had given him in this world. He knew exactly who he was, and everything Jesus did flowed out from knowing who he was. He was never trying to prove a point, never trying to get one over on other people, never trying to insult other people to make himself look better. None of that going on. I looked up, well, I just read this morning, I had one of those great moments actually, reading a book by Adrian Plass. I don't know if this ever happens to you, but I thought, oh, I'll just pick that book up this morning and just have a little delve into it. It's lots of thoughts about Jesus. And then into my head popped the thought, maybe I'll read page 31. Now, I don't, you know, I'm not, I'm very cautious about, you know, the proclamations that Jesus, God said this to me or God said that to me. Because I'm always think, you know, test it out. If you think God is nudging you to do something, see, you know, you never know, do you? But anyway, so this, you know, I had this nudge in my head, read page 31. So I opened it to page 31, and this was on page 31. John 15, which fits perfectly with what I was thinking about for this morning, really. And I won't read it all to you, but that bit at the top, my command is this, said Jesus, love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You're my friends if you do what I command. And who knows that for all of us, the times that no one else knows about where you've laid down your life for somebody else. You've sacrificed something for somebody else. You've gone out of your way for somebody else. And it'll never make the headlines. And maybe you've even forgotten about it. But this is what Jesus is talking about. You know, that way of life, which is different. That different kind of living, really. And when I was reading the book, Adrian Plass, his comment on it I really liked. In his typical, I don't know if you know his writings, but he's got a lot of humour in his writings. And when he was looking at this passage, he said, it's got a touch of the sort of concerned mother about it. you know, room full of kids, and she's saying, look, I've got to go out for 10 minutes, got to go away, look after each other, all right? Be nice to each other, play nicely together, be kind. I'll be back, but I've got to go out. And I love that picture, you know, that Jesus saying, look, I'm going away, and this is the best way you can be with each other. You know, bitterness, destruction, anger, things like that, you know, when they're harbored and they eat away at us, it's never the best way to live. It never, ever achieves the best in life. So he's saying, look, this is a different plan for you. And it's not an easy one. It took Jesus to a cross. So difficult it is, isn't it? But, you know, that call. And I like that description by Adrian, because I think it softens it, you know. We never know. The problem with the Bible is you don't know what Jesus looked like when he said things. So I've put a picture of Jesus with a smile on his face there. Because he may well have looked very happy when he said this to his disciples, not going, right, I'm telling you now, love each other. Right? It was nothing like that, I don't think. It was just saying, no, come on, guys. You've seen what I do. You've seen what works best. Join in with that. Join in with that. And then here's also Nick's, well, the quote from Colossians that Nick put up. Put on then as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, tenderness, humility, meekness and patience. It's almost an image of having a wardrobe, isn't it? Take stuff out. What am I going to, what are you, I don't know how much you thought about what you were going to wear today. Sometimes I walk around in a stupor and I just grab whatever's nearest and hope it will work. Other days, you know, you think, oh, well, better smarten up a bit. But, you know, I remember in our home group situation a few years ago now, we were talking about this idea of putting on these things that are gifts from God to help us in the world, like compassion and humility and meekness and patience. So we started to ascribe bits of the wardrobe to them, you know, the socks of patience, the pants of peace, you know. And the thing was, although they were funny, a few days later, when we had another conversation, we all remembered them. Because we'd ascribed them to funny bits of clothing, they stuck in our heads. You know, and I don't know if that would be helpful for you today, but you know, you can do that, can't you? You can say, God has given us this different wardrobe. And I don't know what you would describe some of these things to. It's totally up to you, really. But, you know, this idea of putting on a different... It's not just outward, is it, of course? It's inward. But still, that it's a parable, isn't it? We're putting on these things which are gifts from God and which Jesus can help us to wear in the world, really. So I want to tell you a couple of stories about situations where people have sort of done that, really, or a couple of parables, really, what they are. I love this phrase. A friend of mine gave it to me a few years ago. We are the best bit of multimedia God has. We are now, in most cases, the way people will meet God. In what we do, in how we treat people, how we apologise if we get it wrong, how we watch out for each other, that sort of thing, really. We are God's multimedia in the world. And I read this lovely story recently about a teacher who was asking her class, I think it was harvest time, and she said, why don't you do, let's all do a drawing which sums up something good about harvest and, you know, what it means to us. So the children went, you know, started going to, and there was one little boy in the class who always struggled. And she was very aware of him, very, very watchful of him, trying to help him. And people drew, I guess, sheaves of corn and lots of other things. But this little boy did a sketchy hand, something like that. That's my hand. That isn't what he drew, but that was my attempt. And when they'd done their drawing, she looked down at him and she saw what he'd drawn. She thought, oh, I wonder what that's about. So she picked it up and she asked the class, what do you think this is for? And some kids, you know, thought it might be the farmer's hand or even God's hand, you know, something like that. So they had their conversations around it and then she gave it back and then they carried on. And while everyone else was working, she went to the little boy and she said, whose hand is that? And he said, it's your hand, miss. I find these stories very moving, I've got to be honest. He said, it's your hand, miss. And that's all he said, very quietly. But, you know, she had helped him. She continued each day to help him, and she took his hand often to guide him or take him from one place to another because he didn't have a lot of confidence. And there, you know, he was acknowledging that, you know, it's your hand. And this is what it's about, isn't it, to be God's multimedia in the world. To be those hands sometimes for people who really need it. And that's what Jesus is talking about again, isn't it? When he's saying love each other, watch out for each other, serve one another. I recently, on Radio 4, I was driving along. I don't think I've told you. Have I told you about Bex Wilson, the bed charity? No, Nick's shaking his head. I'll go with that. Okay, so I was listening to Radio 4, and this programme came on, and the series is called My Name Is. And this one was My Name Is Bex. And Bex Wilson is a young deputy headmistress in Leeds. And she's a Christian, part of a church. But one day she saw that one of the boys in her class was really tired. So she just said to him, "Didn't you sleep very well last night?" And he said, "I don't have a bed, miss." And so she was horrified. You know, she'd not had a conversation like this before. So she talked to him a little bit, and she went to his house, and they actually had no furniture at all in the house because they just couldn't afford anything. And so she went and spoke to her headmistress, her boss, and she said, "Look, I'm sure, you know, if it's all right, I want to help out here, you know." And so she looked around for a bed charity, you know, a charity that was already working to help people in this way, and she couldn't find one at all. So then she thought, "Well, I could start one. How difficult can it be?" Turned out, she said, to be very difficult indeed. Beds, obviously, are very big to store. They're difficult to transport. And you've got to have new ones. You can't give people used beds. They've got to be brand new. However, she wrote in her church and lots of other people. It was interesting because they had one or two people from her church on the programme who said she can be very persuasive. But one of the things I loved about the story was this whole notion that she began by thinking, "Well, it can't be very difficult. I'll have a go." And I feel, you know, God would be saying, "Brilliant, Bex. It's going to be really hard, actually, but you start. Just start from that point of thinking you can do it, and I'll help you with the tough bits." And that's, you know, and Radio 4 had picked up on the work she was doing, and it's continuing to this day. And I think the charity is called Zarak. But if you look up Bex Wilson Bed Charity, you will, I'm sure you'll find her website, but you can listen to the programme again on Sounds, BBC Sounds. It's called My Name Is Bex. And it's a really powerful programme about the difference that she's making. But again, you know, best bit of multimedia that God has in the world. And I like those two stories together because Bex has done something extraordinary that I don't think I could ever do. But that's who she is. That's her personality. The hand story is another kind of story, isn't it? It's that little thing that we do, the little smile, the little hand, the little bit of patience we offer somebody when we don't want to be patient. So those two stories really stand side by side. And this final story I want to tell you about, I think is not true, actually. I think it's a sort of myth that's grown up around this pianist called Paderewski. I think he might... Has anyone heard of Paderewski? Is he Polish?
I don't know, but my father, when I was a little girl, had
something
wrong, he used to call me Paderewski.
Oh, really?
Oh.
Okay, because he was a pianist and a composer, wasn't he? Well, this story that's often passed around now, when people recognise that it might be half true or, you know, just have grown up as a bit of a myth, but it's a great parable. That's why I want to offer it to you today. So, this is a sort of sketch of him, Paderewski there. And what happened was he was giving a big concert and loads of people pitched up looking absolutely smart, totally at their best because they wanted a great night out. And a mother took a little boy who got very restless very quickly while they were waiting for something to happen. She got distracted. She was talking to the person next to her. And when she looked back, the seat was empty. And the little boy was wandering up to the front where there was this beautiful piano. And it was before anyone had come on stage. And the little boy climbed onto the stage, started playing chopsticks at this piano. And everyone was horrified. They were like, "Get that boy off now. We didn't come to see and hear this." But Paderewski, in the wings, noticed, saw what was going on. Quickly pulled on his tuxedo, went onto the stage and he knelt close to the boy and he said, "That's great, keep playing that, don't quit, keep going." And he started to join in and play a concerto around the chopsticks that the boy was playing. And I got this from a book I've been reading called Dangerous Wonder. And it's the way that Mike Iaconelli, who wrote it, finishes the book. Because he says this. He says, you know, one day we may get to heaven and discover the concerto that God was playing when we were doing our chopsticks. When we're muddling along, wondering if we're making much difference. You know, when things go wrong, or our plans are laid and then they fall apart, or people let us down, or, you know, and we're praying and trying to follow Jesus each day and some days go better than others. Here we are playing our chopsticks, but one day we will find that God alongside us was playing this fantastic concerto. And he is saying to us right now, keep playing, you're doing great, don't give up. Keep going, I love it. So that's what I want to leave you with, that encouragement that, like the Queen, with the way that she has served, with who she is, the resources she has, the personality and the lifestyle she has, who we are, with our lifestyle, with our personality, with what we have or don't have, our resources, keep going, don't quit, keep serving, keep loving God, keep playing chopsticks, because one day we will see where God was involved with it all, helping us. So, I think we'll go on to the final hymn here to close. Today is actually the day of Pentecost, so it's also a day to think about God's Spirit coming into our lives and the way that He works through us to others as well. So I'm going to jump that next slide. I'm just going to go straight onto here. This one is our, you know, our hope. That, of course, one day the world will all be sorted out when Jesus returns. But also, perhaps, I wonder where today we might meet Jesus, tomorrow, this week, where we might meet him or someone else will bring Jesus into our lives in who they are and what they will do for us. But we're thinking all about that. Soon and very soon, we're going to see the King. So we'll sing this. If you'd like to stand up. And a prayer to close. Lord, thank you for the great promise we have in you, that we have this future hope, that one day there will be no more tears or crying or pain, that there will be a whole different way of life lasting forever. And Lord, in the meantime, in this week coming, help us to share that in some way with how we are, what we do, the way we treat others. Help us to share something of that promise and that hope. And Lord, I pray for anyone here today who needs to get a glimpse of you as King again this week, to know that encouragement in their lives. Please would you make that happen. In Jesus' name, amen.